Beyond Athletic, episode 33.
I just was rolling the last grass one day and I said, you know what? I want to take this to the next level. And I said, if I'm going to put all this time into this sport, why be mediocre? Why just get by? Why not be the best? And why not make the national team?
I'm Trofem Anderson and I'm Beyond Athletic.
You might be smarter. Your daddy might own a company, but you will not outwork me.
This one right here is for the people.
I'm your host, Ryan J. Owens, current pro athlete, entrepreneur, and former USA national team volleyball player. I will not be defined by my athleticism alone, but I've learned how to leverage it to stay passionate about it and prepare for life. That's why the Beyond Athletic podcast was born. I'll bring you case studies of current and former elite athletes making it happen in life, as well as tips and lessons from top sources in sports, nutrition, fitness, entrepreneurship, and more. I'm here to tell you that you are Beyond Athletic. So today's episode is actually a really cool athlete case study with a Canadian rower. He is a world champion in 2014. Very interesting young guy going to school in Washington, D.C. Actually, this is a pretty fun one. So he's pretty lighthearted with everything. And the conversation is interesting because I've never had on an athlete in such a sport as rowing. And so I learned a bunch through this. I hope you're going to learn a lot. Make sure if you do like it, you tweet at Ryan J-A-Y Owens. And just let me know what you liked, even if you didn't like it, or if you'd like some guests to come on you think that you'd like to hear from, just let me know. If you've got a comment for Trofem, make sure you tell me, because this episode is with Trofem Anderson of Canada, and I think you're going to enjoy it. What is up, everyone? Ryan J. Owens here. Today is another athlete case study where athletes learn to be great in sport and life. And you go beyond just being your typical athlete. Today's featured guest is Trofem Anderson. Trofem, are you ready to share your story?
Yeah, let's go.
All right, well, he's from Ontario, Canada, born and raised. He started rowing when he was in ninth grade. He rowed for the best high school in Canada. He won 3 national high school championships and 2 Canadian Henleys. He is 7th in the men's 8 at the 2010 Junior World Championships. He got a full ride, which is a full scholarship stipendy if you're in Serbia, Croatia, at George Washington. And he also got offers from University of British Columbia and Cal Berkeley. We've had a couple guests on from there. He was 5th. In men's Cox 4 at the 2013 Under-23 World Champs. He's world champion in 2014 at the Cox 4. He was junior, Under-23 senior development team, and this is all for Team Canada, so now he's basically preparing to try and get a shot at the next Olympics, right?
Yeah, the next or 2020, we'll see how that goes.
I'm hoping the next for you, but give it your best, I'm sure. You got a bachelor's in business at George Washington, yeah?
Yep.
And then now you're working on your master's in sports management. And you were at the last 2 Olympics, Sochi and in London, right?
Yeah, yep.
And you did research there. So a lot of interesting stuff going on in your life, Trofem, but...
Row had some great successes with rowing in the last few years and this past summer. Now I saw the opportunity to be able to get a master's degree in sports management. I jumped right on that to further my knowledge of sport and the Olympic movement. Continue to do research both within Canada with a few different high-performance sport programs that we run in Canada and also here with the Olympics and mega events. And that's why I went to the last 2 games. Now I'm in my last semester, finishing up my master's. Going to be done in the spring, and then I'll head back to Canada and continue training and giving it all I can for the rowing as an athlete, and go from there. So I'm kind of just right now in the lull period of pretty cold out here, and just training full time, 3 times a day. I was out on the water today, pretty miserable, but got to get through it.
How cold is it there now?
It was I don't know Fahrenheit, to tell you the truth, but it was minus 18 Celsius.
Woo! Yesterday, so no problem.
Yeah, it was pretty miserable. Now, luckily we didn't have to go on the water yesterday, but it's not been too fun. And we're leaving tomorrow actually for a training camp in Florida, so that'll be nice. Hopefully get a good tan over the next week.
Yeah. And just give us a little bit about how you grew up, single child, all that kind of good stuff.
So grew up with my parents at home, only child. So I personally, a lot of people that have siblings are like, oh, how'd you get through? I'd hate living by myself. I like to think of myself as a pretty personable person. I like to talk, like to be around people. So coming home at the end of the night doing that, I really had no problem because I was so busy during the days and stuff. So I really had, I loved growing up as an only child. I was able to do a lot of things, experience a lot of things, especially just with travel and the opportunities that I've been able to go on because of that. So that's been really nice, and I've enjoyed it thoroughly. And yeah, grew up small town, Ontario. So I guess coming to a big city here was quite the change. And I guess the biggest shocker to me at first was how readily available everything was. I could get food until 4 a.m. I could walk couple kilometers down the street and have any food option I could want. When I go home, it's quite the eye-opener when I go home and it's 9 o'clock and even Wendy's closed. So that, not that I eat at Wendy's all the time, but I'm just so, yeah.
Awesome. That's great. That's a lot of stuff, and I'm glad we got like a brief bit about you, and now we definitely know a ton more about you, and we know that you don't always indulge in Wendy's, so that's a good thing. Listen, before we're going to get into today's topics, your lessons and pretty much like some tools and tips for people that may want to do what you've done, and that could be in any fashion, whether they're going after a business degree or a sports management master's, or to be a rower, to work for the IOC. I mean, you're doing so much. It's really, there's a lot of different ways you're going to be inspirational. So before we get into all that, could you share a favorite quote of yours?
Yeah, I would say it's hard to say because I have a few, but my favorite is definitely from my high school rowing coach. And he always told me, I'm a shorter guy, 6 feet compared to most rowers who are a lot taller. And he always said, you always got to make sure you're 10 times better than the next guy. So not just because of being a smaller guy, you can't just be a little better. You always got to be 10 times better. So my favorite quote is definitely, everything I do, I try to be 10 times better.
And who was that coach?
His name was John Rossetti, and he was my high school coach. He was also a national team coach with Canada for many years, and a really inspirational person.
And how do you spell his last name?
Russetti.
Cool. I just want to put that because it's going to be in the show notes for anybody that's listening. Because one of the things on the show that I like to do is I like to show people that it doesn't matter who you know, like for instance in your small circles. If you don't know someone in the circles that you want to be in, you can always just reach out to them. I mean, take for example, you got a random message from me on LinkedIn, and now here we are talking about this stuff here. So whatever you want, you got to go after it. And if anybody's looking into, getting into rowing, maybe this could be a good coach for them to reach out to, just like any of the other ones you might mention. So listen, thanks for sharing that. And speaking of these really important people in your life, could you just highlight a few key people in terms of mentors in your sport and in life?
Along my career? Yeah, I would say, definitely Mr. Rossetti, my high school coach, was a game changer and really allowed me to stay on track in high school. Again, being a smaller person, I really had to make the decision whether I was going to
put it this way, it didn't come naturally, per se. I didn't just set out on erg and pull great numbers. I didn't just sit in a boat and move it because I was so long and strong in that sense. So I really had to work at it. So he really helped me, push me through. I would say prior to going to university and even high school, my uncle at the time, he was a huge player with getting me active, getting me physically active, which I'll talk about later when we come to that question, but getting me going and things like that at a young age. So he played a huge role, my uncle, my high school coach, and I would say, of course, my college coach and the college athletic department as a whole here at GW, between the athletic director and my coach, they were both pivotal in making sure that I was on track and I had the resources that I needed to compete with the best people. Because at the end of the day, not only did I want to be the best I could be at the collegiate level and help my school perform as best as they could, but I knew I wanted to make the national team and compete with the best people in the world at the national championship, or excuse me, the world championship.
Yeah. No, thanks for sharing. I love that. And, you know, it's really important to highlight the mentors in successful athletes' lives for me, because for the listeners, what it says is that there's many people that are going to help you on this road to your success. If you're going to work your butt off for it, you're definitely going to have a lot of people that are going to be able to contribute. So don't be afraid to grab different people to help you in life. And so, I mean, you mentioned not just coaches, but also family members. And so it's not about just mentorship in your sport, Trofim, but it's about mentors in life, just about how to live life. Because sport is a great vehicle to learn just that. So let's dive into it and start things off with sharing not one of your successful moments, because we know you're a world champ right now. But we want to talk about the struggles and just highlight one of your biggest struggles getting to where you are and take us back to that moment.
Yeah, so believe it or not, this goes back a long time, but I was in fourth grade, so I would say I was 8 or 9 years old at the time, and I don't know what it was, but pretty much I would classify myself as being obese. I was 8 or 9. I weighed the first time I stepped on the scale, I weighed 230 pounds at that age. And I was not very mobile. I didn't play sports. Maybe that's why I joined rowing, because I joined much later in life. I played some football for a while because, you know, I could just hop on the line. And at that age, 230 pounds
a truck.
Yeah. So that, even that didn't last for very long. And it's really funny because I was home for a few weeks in December, and I ran into my father and I were together, and we ran into one of my coaches from back then, and we were just laughing and we talked about the times. All we had to do with warm up was run around the football field twice, and that was it. And I vividly remember how much longer, like I'm talking at least 5 to 6 minutes longer, it would take me from the second last guy on the team. So not only was I the last guy to make two laps around the football field, I was like 5-6 minutes back from the second last guy. So it was a disaster.
Wow.
And so that was my life in grade 4, grade 5, pretty similar. And then my uncle, who I was talking about, he had been really athletic when he was younger. He was on an OHL team at the time. I forget the name, but then a couple farm teams for the NHL. So he was very active, and even though he was older, he was in his, I want to say, late 50s, 60s at the time. But he went to the YMCA every morning, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. He went every those 4 days at 5 a.m. And he's like, listen, like, you know, you got to do something with your life. My doctor was like, you got to do something with your life. You're going to get diabetes if you don't keep this up, or if you do keep this up. So he started taking me to the Y, and he forced me to go every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. I'd get my 5:15 a.m. phone call. I'd have to wake up, and we're talking like before, you know, grade 5, grade 6, grade 7, grade 8.
Wow.
So it's like I'm waking up at 5:15 in elementary school. we'd go to the Y, and I would do 45 minutes every day on the Stairmaster. And I would just do it, and it was painful, and I was miserable. And I remember he would try to get me to play basketball afterwards, like, you know, shoot some hoops, and I couldn't even do that because, like, I had no skills because I'd never played sports before because I couldn't. And it was a mess. So anyways, and then after the Y, we'd go to Tim Hortons, which I'm sure you've heard of as a Canadian staple. And we'd go there for coffee with his 60-year-old friends. And then I'd go off to grade 8 for the day or grade 7. So that continued from grade 5, grade 6, grade 7, and grade 8. To the point in grade 8, I was finally, by the end of grade 8, I was at like a stable weight. Like I was 195, I want to say. So no longer obese, I would classify. But anyways, yeah. So, and then unfortunately with high school starting an hour or so earlier than elementary school, I couldn't work out with him anymore. And so I kind of, that finished off there. And I came into grade 9 and at my original high school that I was at. And I, about a month into school, I of course joined the football team again, because that's all I knew. All I knew was to do was play football. So struggled through that for the fall, and that finished in October. And I said, "What can I do next?" And I came across the rowing team, and it was all uphill from there.
Now this, wow, there's a lot in there, and I'm telling you, you're a really great storyteller, you're a funny guy, so it's really hard not to laugh at a very serious situation, honestly. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, for anybody out there, I had a guest back, one of my initial guests when I launched this podcast, and he's actually a Brazilian national team player for volleyball. And this guy made it to the Atlanta Olympics, and he's one of the best in the world. And he was the same as you when he was a kid, only he's 6'6". But he was like on the verge of obesity, and it was kind of like, well, what do I do in order to get in shape? And that's how he got into sports. So anybody out there listening, you know, there's people that aren't athletes. You can change your situation, but you got to do it. And if you can find somebody, like Trofim was lucky. He had his uncle who, actually, you got to say his name. What was his name?
Uncle Harry.
Uncle Harry, I love it. And your Uncle Harry was playing in the NHL even, so I mean he had a background of athletics and he knew how to take care of himself, so he was a great mentor in terms of showing you how to just live a little bit healthier. So there's some great takeaways from that, and I guess if you were to leave people with one big lesson from that, what would it be?
Honestly, I would say my biggest lesson was just never giving up, no matter what. I mean, it sounds so stupid and so obvious, but I mean, it's true. Like when I was running through the football field, and it was, like I said, literally 5-6 minutes after everyone else, I just, you know, kept pushing through it. When I'd go with him to the Y, I would be miserable and kept pushing through it. And now that I'm in rowing, which is a sport that's decided by, you know, sometimes milliseconds, and it's just mentally training and getting through. You know, I don't go to practice and have an easy day. I don't go to practice and I'm bored. You know, it's not a sport where it's a 4-hour-long practice, 3 hours or whatever is spent, you know, just talking or working on technique, things like that. Almost every workout I do is spent at a high heart rate, which is miserable, not fun, staring at a screen or staring off into the water, which can be nice sometimes. But, you know, it's a lot of mental strength that's required, and not giving up over all those years when it was next to impossible and I thought it was next to impossible. I mean, now I got to go sit down at ERG for an hour and a half, and I just think back to those days and I'm like, come on, this is, at least I can do this now.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are some great takeaways, and I do love that. And I don't think it's too cliche really, because never giving up. It's just one of those basic things that people have to learn. If you want something, you got to work hard. And no matter what it is in life, right? You have to work hard for it. There's nothing that's going to come easy. Nothing. I mean, nothing that's worth it, at least. So if you have goals, you got to just work your butt off. And I love that you never gave up. And I played high school football. I remember my freshman year, I was thinking the same thing. Like, what sport do I play? I got to play a sport. Like, and I went to high school football. I'm telling you, man, I was a guard, and I was not any kind of weight. I was skinny as a pencil, and I was playing left guard. And I remember I stopped the day that a guy named Giddy.
Yeah.
Giddy, we were doing a pancake drill where you lay on your back, and then you have to get up. Yeah. And one guy has the football, for people who don't know, and you have to run past the other guy who's getting up too. So you're both a little disorientated and you got to get past them. And you're not supposed to grab a face mask. And Giddy pulled mine as I was going past him and he almost broke my back. And I realized at that point, football is not for Ryan J. Owens. Not at all. So anyways, I love the storytelling and I want to move it forward. And I don't want to disappoint too many people that were like, let's say, starting off in rowing or maybe thinking about it with like, because I mean, I know how you said you're staring at a screen, you're working really hard and it's kind of like, there's not a lot of beauty, let's say, in it, but there is some great side. So why don't you take us to something good about it? And what we're going to do is we're going to talk about your light bulb moment first. And when you realize like, this is the direction I need to take in life and sport, if it's the same.
Yeah. So like I said, I started rowing grade 9. I was at a high school that was just the feeder high school for my elementary school. So I didn't really think into it or choose it. I just went with the flow. You know, luckily where I was in Canada, the public system like was a good system. I guess my point there is like it wasn't really a thing to go to a private school in my area, so I didn't, and I just went to the normal high school. And first couple of years rode, they were okay, but it was the fall of grade 10 when we started doing the what they're called as ERG competitions. So it's just a straight out 2,000 meter ERG test. How fast can you do it? And it's just a ton of these indoor rowing machines lined up in a gym. So every year we have like the Canadian championships, we had the Ontario championships, and then we had my regional championships. So I went to those, really had no idea what I was doing, didn't know even what to expect. And I remember the first one I got second, then I got first, and then I got second. And people were like, who are you? And I even said, I don't know, to be honest. I think this is kind of funny. And I don't know how I did that. And so in grade 10, I started to realize, wow, I actually might have a shot at doing this rowing thing, even though I'm a smaller guy, like I said. And so the grade 10 spring, my spring season was kind of unfortunate in the sense that, you know, there was only like 5 guys on my team. And the team that I rowed for wasn't really, at the time, wasn't very dominant or big in rowing. So that was to be expected. And there was a few of us. There was one good guy who rowed on his own, but it was kind of like he was kept to himself and we didn't really train with him or didn't row with him. But then we had a group of 4 of us, and me and this other kid who didn't have as very much experience either. Him and I were both pretty fresh to it and didn't know what was going on. We put together a double, and so that's a 2-person boat, and we put that together, and out of nowhere, we just, whatever, did it for fun. 2 weeks before our national championships, we came second at this regatta, and the team that beat us was E.L. Crosley, which is the top high school in Canada. And so, we were kind of like, wow, this is unbelievable. How do we come so close to these guys? I mean, these are the best. Who are we? And yeah. So we trained and we wanted to get in the double or get that boat into our national championships. But our coaches just didn't want to enter us into that boat in the national championships. So unfortunately, we never got to compete. Well, turns out that those guys, so we were a second and a half of them, second and a half off of them 2 weeks prior. And those guys went on to win the national championships by like 4 seconds to second place. So we were like, oh my gosh, you know. And at the time, my high school hadn't had a medal for men's rowing in over a decade. So it was a heartbreaker, I would say, because we had it together, and who knows if we would have trained more, if we would have been closer to them or what. So after that spring, that summer I rowed in the club with the local club, and the local club brings together all the high schools. So I was fortunate to row with E.L. Crosley because that was just actually around the corner from me, and with those guys. And it was just, you know, the atmosphere was totally different. The training, even at such a young age, the training was much more intense, and everyone was more motivated and on track, and they knew what they had to do to succeed. And that was partially because of the coach, John Rossitti. Well, that wasn't partially, that was completely because of him. And so that summer, I really thought long and hard, and I was, I remember, so again, just looking back to one of my odd moments in life, we have a 1-acre long or 1-acre size front yard with grass on it. Mm-hmm. However, my father is old school and refuses to buy a driving lawnmower. And he also refused to get a lawn service. So every 2 weeks, I was out there with the lawnmower, the push lawnmower, and it would take me 4 hours. And I would have to push lawnmower the acre-sized grass. So I'm pushing the lawnmower one day, really random, and you know, I had 4 hours to think to myself with the noise of a lawnmower, so it wasn't really like anyone was bothering me or I had anyone to talk to. And I just was rolling the last one, grass one day, and I said, you know what? I want to take this to the next level. And I said, if I'm going to put all this time into the sport, why be mediocre? Why just get by? Why not be the best and why not make the national team? So it was that day that I said, I gotta stop what I'm doing. I got to revamp everything. I got to look at my training. I got to get a strict weight program. Even going into grade 11 at that young of age, I know I need to do weights. I need to get serious with my training. And it all started there. So I started cooking my own meals. So I was able to eat healthier. I started going to a trainer, which then carried on to actually this day, him and I still keep in contact and I check in with him and get bounce ideas off him with my weight training. And I threw it all together from there. And ultimately I switched schools to E.L. Crosley for grade 11. And that's when it really, that one day was the game changer. Since that day, I haven't looked back and it's continual improvement since then.
Wow. That was a lot. And I mean, there's so many, I like to call them value bombs, honestly. But you, if I'm going to sum it all up, because anybody that wants to hear all that over again, you should, because there's just so many takeaways in there. But tell me if I do a good job of this.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, demand more of yourself. If you're serious about whatever sport you're doing, demand more of yourself. What can you do to take it to the next level? And then put a plan together. So demand more, get a plan together, and then associate yourself with the best at that level, that next level. So always be looking for the best in your sport so that you can constantly be challenged. And if I were going to have any takeaways, it'd be those three things.
I would say that's pretty bang on. That's good. much more concise, I'll tell you that.
I love it. You need to tell the stories. I need to just like package it up because I mean there's a lot in there and it even makes me think like, man, I wish my junior year of high school I could have been like as focused as you. I mean, I didn't know what the heck to do when I was like, oh, I'm really good at volleyball. Like I just made my varsity team at the end of my first year playing and I have no idea what I'm doing. So I was like, you know, if I would have gotten together a weight program and strength program, who knows, you know? So I think a lot of people can learn a ton from that. And let's talk about now your proudest moment so far. And that could be in life or sport. It doesn't matter, both.
Well, I would say, you know what? And again, this is not just because we won, but without a doubt, No questions asked. My proudest moment was definitely this summer, winning the world championships and being able to say I'm a world champion and go and just know that not so much, like I said, it's not because we won, but it's because along the 9 years to get there, there was just so many obstacles and so many miserable days and just so many coaches. I mean, To be fair to some of them, I'm a smaller guy. When you look at me, you don't say, and that's just the way it is in rowing. You don't look at me and say, oh yeah, he's gonna be a stellar rower, or that's the guy we need in the boat. You know, just by my appearances. So, and that hit me hard over the years because there were times when I would have to race against these bigger guys, and I automatically was kind of at a disadvantage because the coach looked at it and thought they would be better. So they might have got more opportunities or I was kind of lacking. So, I mean, it was a constant struggle for 9 years. It really was. And, you know, every time I was extremely fortunate how dedicated and motivated that I am and was over the years that I have been able to consistently improve and consistently come back and come back mentally stronger and not give up. So I've been lucky to be able to improve. And when I say I'm going to do things, I do them, which is, you know, in a sport like in rowing where it's all numbers when it comes to training and stuff, it gets mentally mundane and intense sometimes. So my proudest moment was by far this summer when we won, and just being able to look back and say, wow, I can't believe I did it and overcome it. And even, you know what, to talk to the people that doubted me and really had no idea or thought that I would ever do it. Or to be honest, they didn't even know I was continuing to row. This is like past coaches, this and that. To really have them be like, wow, I can't believe that you actually did it and you got to where you are. So that was pretty incredible for me. And it was by far, just looking back on it, to be honest, I mean, it's been like, 6 months now? I still look back on that race and I can't believe it. Just the emotions that were involved in it too, between, I guess I can go on a little tangent here. I mean, on race day, I just remember, you know, so we had a heat and we had a final, and the heat was good, but New Zealand, who we knew would be really good, they gave us a good push in the heat and they came back. And I just remember on that finals day, like, oh my God, the stress that was there and to finally get over it and get the race out of the way. And even off the start, you know, a lot of people talk about in rowing, you know, where you are off the start, the first 200 meters of the race. Like, and we were down. I mean, we were fifth out of six off the start. You had all these crews just gunning away. And all of us, we had a good feeling, and I didn't panic. I remember just being so calm and just thinking to myself, like, whatever happens, happens, you know, I just go with this. It feels good. This is fun. And next thing I know, we're out front, and I just remember, I can perfectly remember the race being in severe pain and just being like, wow, we're actually out front right now at the World Championships. And it was funny because leading up to that, us as a crew, we'd always joke like, oh, if we won, like, let's do this or let's scream this and that. When we passed the finish line, like, literally it was dead silent and no one said anything. And like, it was not climatic or anything. We all just like looked at each other and we were like, what? Are you serious? Like, and I remember like we all paused it. There's some video footage online. It's literally like us. It looks so silly because we're just staring at each other for like a minute. And then all of a sudden we start cheering like out of nowhere. It's like we're totally delayed. So, yeah. And my father was there too, watching the race, and that was great to hear him and have him, because he's been there all along the way. Loved coming to rowing events, and mother, of course, but she hates traveling, so she was watching online. But yeah, so that was by far the most accomplished. And you know what? Whenever I'm in a miserable day now, or whenever it's, because now it's kind of some dark times now. You know, it's like I'm done with under 23s. I gotta keep pushing to make the senior teams, the guys, the level of experience and intensity is just so much more elevated than what it's been in the past. And, you know, you got to realize how much more everything I was doing before, it's got to be 10 times better now just to continue on with the sport. So when I'm having some tough days or some dark days, I look back to that and I'm just like, you know what? Got to keep going.
Yeah, I love that. And there's so many takeaways. And I like how you mentioned it's your proudest moment, not so much because you won, but because you accomplished so much. You overcame so much, like the disadvantage of your size, the people who doubted you, you know, the struggle for 9 years. And thinking back to like when you were playing football, you know, and you're 5-6 minutes behind the guy that was second to last, and knowing that every time you made it 1%, 10% better, and that every step of the way you got improvement, you know, out of it. And that now you're at this point, you just accomplished one of the proudest things in your career, and now you know already to step it up more, it's going to take at least 10 times being 10 times better. And so that's what I want people to take away from this, is that if you're going to have a champion mindset, you really got to realize that you can always push to be better. There's always another level, you know, you can always get better. Even if you're at the top, you can reach higher. So another thing that I'd like to mention there was that it's really important that you try to not put so much pressure on yourself. Like you mentioned, you were in the race and you just felt kind of like calm. You're like, all right, whatever happens, happens. And then when you finish the race, that's why actually during all that pain, Trofim was kind of like sitting there with the rest of his team kind of stunned, because you get into this thing called flow, and you can get into flow as an athlete, as a business person, whatever, when you're studying. And it's basically like the zone where everything just kind of meets together and syncs up perfectly and nothing seems impossible. So I love that, man. That sounds really cool. I love the stories. All right. So we've gone over a bunch, and I don't want to push the time too long. I know you've got some stuff to do. I've got some stuff to do. So why did you choose to go to a U.S. school over Canadian?
Yeah, and you know what? It's tough because we have all these great athletes in Canada. You know, I mean, first of all, people got to realize, like, you know, Canada, we're the second largest landmass country in the world, but we have a population that's pretty equivalent with California. So when you think about it in that way, and what it is, it's like, oh, well, there's not that many athletes. Yes. So you think, like, when we have to compete in the winter sports and the summer sports and that, like, it's difficult because we literally have such a small country. But there are very, very talented athletes in Canada, and there's amazing potential, especially now with funding opportunities. You know, our sports, our high performance sport in Canada is government funded. So, I mean, that's incredible alone. That doesn't even exist in the U.S. However, you know, at the collegiate level, it's still a very core sport dominated. So in Canada, core sport, basketball, hockey, football, soccer. It's not too diverse, but I also should say that because it is diverse, because there are some schools that, like, for instance, University of British Columbia. I mean, that school rivals a U.S. school any day, especially with the amount of programs they offer, teams and all that. But it's just not – men's rowing isn't as widespread and diverse, I would say, as it is in the U.S. Another big thing is, I mean, simply the temperature in Canada. So you can't have you know, half the rowing teams in Canada are either in Ontario or British Columbia. There's a few in the middle in Alberta and out east now in Quebec, but for the most part, those are where they are. And, you know, in Ontario, like, you don't get on the water until about May 1st, May 5th, around there. I mean, it's frozen. So you can't have a spring national championship because those teams in Ontario would be practicing for a month before the national championship. So they're forced to have them in the winter in November. And because of that, it kind of throws off the rowing cycle, because when the rest of the world is doing long distance races, Canada is doing these 2000 meter races sprinting. So, you know, in the U.S., though, it's the opposite. The U.S., you know, our national championships are June 1st. You finish your national championships, you go home for 2 days, and you go right up to the National Training Center and you try to make a national team. So it's perfect, and it's a great setup. So not that I didn't want to stay in Canada, because, again, UBC, I love British Columbia, I love Vancouver, and I did want to be a Thunderbird. But the opportunity here was very unique, to be able to come out of school without any debt, to be able to go to school in a city that I literally am staring at the White House right now, outside of my window, and to have the opportunities to, you know, I walked 10 minutes to my boathouse, I walked 10 minutes to my classes. And it was just, everything came together. And then ultimately, sorry, I know I'm taking a long time, but this is kind of the kicker right here. You know, GW was a very fresh and young team. And you look at a team like Cal, who they're the best, them in Washington, they destroy it every year. And it's like, you know, when in trying to choose where do I want to go, I said to myself, do I want to go to a massive, already established team? And you know what? Maybe be a guy that helps continue to make the team as good as it is. And, or, you know, whether they get first, second, third, it's expected. Or do I want to come to a smaller team like George Washington, take them from the absolute bottom? When I was a freshman, I mean, we weren't even allowed to compete at the national championships, to now finishing 14th in the country last year, beating teams like UPenn, Dartmouth, all these teams that it was unheard of for us to ever beat. And now look back on that and say, you know what? I actually did make a difference on a small team, leaving it now. Now I was their first ever recruit. Last year they had 16 recruits. So wow. To me, that was a bigger impact, and I wanted to make that bigger impact.
Yeah, there's a lot there. You know, I love that. And people listening, I mean, he went because of the competition. He went because it offered him a better, let's say, training cycle so that he could match up with his goals of being on the national team.
Exactly.
He went because, you know, and chose this school over better schools because he could be a game changer. You know, he could be challenged. Once again, challenge is everything. If we get comfortable, we're only going to stay where we are. If you can only get better if you get uncomfortable. So you have to get a little uncomfortable in order to improve. And so tons of great lessons there, man. It's okay that you went over. We're just going to have to go a lot quicker through the tip jar. But
okay.
I do want to just say one thing. You got a full ride to George Washington. And I want people listening to know that if you're interested in rowing and if you get good enough, that is something that is actually out there for students, is that they can row for schools, for actually you could go to school for free. And this is not just in the States. Like you mentioned, British Columbia, University of British Columbia also offers, and I'm sure other schools. So keep that in mind. And
yeah,
we know what's got you most excited, which is basically your master's and potential for the IOC in the future, and also training to try and make this Olympic team this next coming quad, or the other one after. It doesn't matter. You're young.
Yeah.
Let's skip right on to the skip or the tip jar. And what I want to do is I just want to like bounce through these, and you give me something pretty quick for each one, and we'll leave people with just a bunch of tips and tools that they could implement today. Okay.
Yeah.
What's the best advice you ever received?
I would say, you know what? Just looking back at not giving up again, it just, nothing's impossible. I feel terrible because I got these like cliche, what I think is the best, but I truly, truly believe I've been told, you know, many times, nothing's impossible, nothing, you could do it. And I would say that's probably the best advice.
Oh, I feel you. One thing that you like to do when you come to a new arena to compete?
You know what? I like to walk around really slowly and just look at everything, whether it's the the merchandise that they're giving out, where they get the water bottles, what the water looks like. I just mosey around, maybe talk to some people. I just like to become comfortable with the area.
Yeah, check it out. I mean, it's great to know your environment. How long do you sleep? And then what's your morning ritual for, say, the first 2 hours of your morning?
Yeah, so I like to get to bed by 10 o'clock at the latest. I aim for 9 o'clock if I can. But that's just because right now the group that I'm training with here, I'm fortunate enough to have, there's a U.S. training center. A U.S. club here in Washington that acts as a kind of a U.S. satellite training center. And so I'm able to train with them, and we just train very early. So I wake up at 5 a.m. every day. So I get to bed 9:10, wake up at 5. From there, I kind of stare out the window, see what the weather looks like. I got to get on my phone. It's terrible to say, but it wakes me up. So go on my phone, check some Twitter, check some Facebook, maybe Snapchat if I'm feeling it that day. I get up. I head over to my favorite machine in the kitchen. It's called Nespresso. I brew myself 2 nice strong shots of Nespresso. I walk back. And you know, this whole time I give myself about 20 minutes to get ready. I could probably get ready in 6 minutes, but I like to just, again, walk slow and do everything. So I get my Nespresso, I drink it, I pack my bag, I get dressed up, hop on my bike. Well, I grab my bike, take my bike down the elevator, hop out onto the road there. I bike to practice. It takes about 6 minutes. Get to practice, put my stuff away. We start off with about 20 minutes of core stretching. Then we talk about the plan for that day. We get out in our singles out on the Potomac River here in Washington. Row from anywhere from 90 minutes to 2 hours. Wrap that up, finish that off, get back on my bike, get home, and come crack some eggs and bacon.
Wow. That is a completely different morning from my mornings, but I like it. I like it. There's something in there that I'm definitely going to throw into mine. I'm switching my workout from about 9 a.m. I'm going to switch it to 7 a.m. So I want to see how that goes.
You know what? You know what I love about it just being earlier is like you finish your workout, it's like 8 o'clock, between 8 o'clock to 8:30, and you don't feel like you've wasted any time. It's just you maximize your day, and especially, yeah. You know, I get in minimum 2, sometimes ideally 3 sessions a day. I mean, you just have so much more time to do 3 sessions when you're going.
I do love it. I mean, ever since I decided to start waking up at 6, I've just been like, my days feel so much longer, so much more productive.
Oh, yeah.
By the time it's, you know, 10 a.m., I'm like, all right, well, I guess I kind of finished everything I normally finish. What do I do now?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, all right. Name one way you like to improve yourself, not as an athlete, but as a person.
You know what? Sounds crazy, but I've just never been one for reading. I just hate reading books. And so I would say, you know, and the older I get, you know, when I was younger, and up, I say younger, up until probably last year, someone would be like, oh, I'm reading a book. I'm like, how do you do that? Like, I hate sitting in the same place. And every time I try to read a book, I'm like, right away I just get sidetracked and I'm like, oh, I could be working out right now, or I could be doing this, this and that. So I'd say an improvement in my personal self would be definitely to read more and to further educate myself, I would say.
I love it. I can tell you one thing. Listen, first of all, I know I used to not like reading because it took me a long time, and I swear to this day, I probably have some kind of learning disability, but I really don't care. You know, one of the great things that helped me out is Tim Ferriss has got this like blog post, and it's about how to read faster. And if I can do anything more efficiently, trust me, I try it. But if that doesn't work for you, Trofim, you've got to check out audible.com. Because on there, you can listen to the books and it's perfect. You can listen while you're working out, you know, or while you're cooking, whatever. So, because there are some great books out there, but I feel you on that.
I like that. Okay, thank you.
Let's see. Now, give one tip for people out there on how to live a little bit healthier.
You know what? Plan. It's all about planning. Sundays, I sit down and I write out my weekly diet. So what I'm going to have before practice, after practice, snack, lunch, dinner. I usually do it. I write the weekly plan out so that I don't like have tuna 3 times a week, because who knew that you can't. Well, I knew this, but I was like, you can eat tuna whenever you want. It's just a myth. Well, I actually looked it up and you're not supposed to eat a lot of tuna. So anyways, so I map that out, and then I go to the grocery store. I buy groceries for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I cook some stuff up, like some staple stuff that I can use for the week, whether it's some sweet potato or quinoa. And then every morning when I cook, I'll usually cook breakfast and then lunch, and package lunch, take it with me. So it's all about planning, because even I know if I slack for a day or two, the next thing I know I'm in the office, because I'm also a teaching assistant, a research assistant. So I'm in the office and I got to go somewhere around class or campus because I didn't pack a lunch. Yeah. So it's all about planning. And it sounds crazy, but it is just a game changer.
It's not at all. You know, I learned this way too late. But thank God I know it now, because it's true. Like when I cook breakfast, I'll put on at the same time something like a staple part of my lunch and dinner for that day or for the next day. And then like I've got stuff. I don't have to waste time doing that. So now all of a sudden I've freed up more time and my life is just so much easier. So that's great, great advice, man. Is there some special program, cause, organization you like to add value to other people?
Not specifically. And that's, it's unfortunate that I can't, because, and I would say it's honestly just because I travel so often and I'm not in a specific place for very long. I just realized I calculated the longest time I was in a single place for a single period of time in 2014 was 4 weeks. And that was because I was in Canada training. So I just don't have the opportunity to really establish myself with an organization or a local organization. There have been ones that I've wanted to, especially with rowing and getting youth and underprivileged youth engaged in rowing, especially here in Washington, and that I've really wanted to be a part of, but I haven't really had the time to. So what I do try is when an opportunity arises or something like that, I will do my best to get a part of it. So it's usually just, you know, kind of bits and pieces here and there. So there's not one organization I would say specifically, but overall, if I can and if I'm able to help in some capacity, I without a doubt try that as much as I can.
Yeah, and that's very obvious, man, because you're doing this podcast. And right now you're about to reach thousands of listeners around the world to help them be better in life and their sports. So, I mean, there you go. It's all about whatever we can do, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's every little bit counts.
Now I'm going to give you a do-over, okay? I'm going to give you a do-over for your athletic career. And you're going to take everything you know now that you've learned along the way. You're going to take this resource, Beyond Athletic, as a podcast, having athletes and experts in all kinds of fields across sport and life. And you're going to be able to use all of that, but go back to right when you decided, I'm going to do this. What would you do differently to set yourself up for success?
I would have hopped in. So, you know, we have tons of different boats in rowing, right? Whether it's one person, two person, four, eight. And I was never really a singles guy. I never rowed on my own, partially because I was just always with teams and bigger teams, and I had a lot of successes in team boats. But looking back and seeing where I am now and seeing where I struggle the most and where I got to make improvements, I would have definitely started rowing the single back as soon as possible. Whether I was whether I was in a team boat or not, I would make sure I was rowing the single all the time. And you know, it's funny because Mr. Rossetti, my coach, would always say, like, you know, we got to get you in the single, this and that. And I would do everything possible to avoid it just because I hated being alone and just not – I just didn't like it. And so looking back, though, number one for sure, without a doubt, that's what I would do.
Yeah. There you go. Anybody that's looking into rowing, make sure you get into single also. Don't limit yourself. So I'm actually going to have on some rowers in the future, and we're talking about Olympic champions. So I'm really excited for that, and it's going to be something I know you'll want to hear. Now I'm going to turn it over to you. I want you to just share some parting pieces of wisdom and just tell people how they can connect with you or follow you along your journey, and then we can say goodbye.
Yeah, so I guess just in parting, like I said, you know, 10 times better. That's the way you got to approach everything. And this goes for any sport, you know, not just rowing. That's a cardio-based sport. And yeah, to improve, I got to do a lot of cardio. I got to lift weights. But even if you're in a sport that doesn't require as much cardio or is more technique-based, it's like, you know, always being able to improve, always finding an area that you can improve on. So every season, when every season finishes, which is for me in August, I take a few weeks off. I have a lot of fun. I'm a firm believer that you always gotta have at least one day a week that you go out and have some fun, whether that be going to the movies, going to see your friends, going to a party, and you always gotta have a few weeks of the year where you just don't do your sport to just really come back and love it. But you know, and come back 120%, that is. But every time in my off season for those few weeks, I look at myself and I say, okay, what differently can I do this year? What didn't I do well last year? So whether that's flexibility, weight training, you know, yoga, your core flexibility, cardio, a lot of long distance cardio, should I do more of that? Wherever it is, I pick that area, that one or two areas, nothing more, just those one or two areas, and I really, really focus on them for the season. And I just keep doing that and doing that. And, you know, if something doesn't go that well, you know, if you're in a new environment, you don't compete as well as you expect to, or things don't go as planned, you don't get bent out of shape. I'm also a firm believer everything happens for a reason. So you know what? If you didn't do so well, look, don't get angry. Don't get angry at other people. Don't blame it on things. Look at yourself and say, what didn't I do? Oh, I didn't pull this time. Because, well, okay. Well, I look at myself and I say, yeah, you know, the last month I didn't really do this type of training, this and that. So I held myself accountable. I believe everything happens for a reason. I don't let things get me down because, again, it happened for a reason. So why get upset? Move on. Stay positive. I wake up every day positive. I go to bed every night positive. I don't let outside distractions get in the way. And I just give it 100% every day. So, yeah. I mean, that's it. And that's got me where I am today. And it's continuing to get me in the right direction. And I guess if you ever have any questions, I'm pretty active on Twitter. I like to – that's kind of my thing. I really should get going on Instagram. I took one picture on Instagram, and that was at the World Champs, and I got a fair amount of likes. And I'm nervous to post another one. I feel like I peaked, you know, I peaked in August. So I just kind of leave that. But my Twitter account, it's actually just my name backwards, funny enough, which is the word my fort. So it's at my_fort. And I'm on Twitter. I'm more than happy to ever answer any questions, this and that. And I'll probably have a website coming up in the next few weeks. So that'll be I'll tweet that out. So Twitter is a great place to get in contact with me. And if you have any questions, no matter who you are, interested in rowing or just some motivational advice, I'm always willing to help.
Awesome. That's a ton of stuff. And listen, if you're listening to this right now, go ahead and tweet at my_fort, F-O-R-T, and then at Beyond Athletic, and tell us what you liked about the show. And thanks so much for being on the show. I just want to acknowledge you for a second, man, because I know that it must have taken so much, knowing now your story, to come from where you were to get to where you are today. And know from just the way you prepare and the way you talk, man, and your outlook, and just how quickly and the way you responded to doing this podcast. I know you're a great person. I know you've worked so hard, and I know you have so much further to go. So I want to acknowledge you for all that hard work and the fact that you are selfless and you look to add value to other people. So thanks so much, Trofim, for being on the show. And I'll love to talk to you and catch up in the future, bud.
Well, thank you very much. I truly appreciate it, and I appreciate the compliments, and it's motivating, and it keeps me going, and it it means a lot. Just saying that, thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem. And I look forward to you being one of our mentors, hopefully for rowers, future rowers out there, where just maybe 15, 20 minutes a month where they can just reach out with questions and then you respond with one video a month and we can help inspire some people around the world in different ways, you know? So, all right, bud. Absolutely. Talk to you soon.
Okay, thanks, sir.
Hey guys, so really cool episode with Trofim, and I hope you did enjoy it. If you did, make sure you leave a rating or a review on iTunes or even Stitcher.com. Just type in the search bar when you go to iTunes.com or Stitcher.com, Beyond Athletic, and make sure you just let us know, what did you like about it? What do you think, would be great to hear from other athletes, things like that. And don't forget to share it with a friend. If anybody out there is an athlete or anybody struggling with things that Trofim struggled with or has a similar story like him, make sure you share this episode with them. Help inspire them. Help uplift anybody that needs value added where they're weakest. So I hope you guys stay challenged. You push yourselves. You become more than just athletic. Take care.
So now I'm up in the courts, pleading my case from the witness box. Telling the judge and the jury the same thing that I said to the cops. On the day that I got arrested, I'm innocent, I protested. She just feels rejected. Had a heart broken by someone she's obsessed with. Cause she likes the sound of my music. She makes her a fan.
What we doing live? Echoes in eternity.
I'm gonna show you how great I am.
And this concludes our Chicago show. Please stay tuned.